Welcome to the Beehive, where we slide that sweet, funny honey down your gullet slicker than a horny soccer mom. Round these parts, they call me Jessup. Joining me today is my little sweet and low, and if you don't know, now you know, Stephanie.
Hi.
We are gearing up for our two-week vacation cross country.
We sure are.
What do you think about that with little Nandor?
Excited, anxious, nervous.
Well, by the time you hear this, we will actually be there.
We will.
Exploring Wyoming, Yellowstone, and all the national parks around that area.
Are there rattlesnakes there?
Rattlesnake.
Are there rattlers? Are the rattlers there?
I don't know why there wasn't an awesome 80s hair metal song called The Rattlesnake or The Rattler.
How about The Rattler's Gonna Get You?
The Rattler's Gonna Get You. Bow, bow. The Rattler's Gonna Get You. Bow, bow.
All right, you heard that two-note riff, Ben Eller? Now make that into a song, and then that's gonna be our hair metal song we'll do. And we'll get Prince Diamond Matt involved in that. So yeah, but we drive in all the way to, we're going to stop by Chicago to meet up with our buddy,
hello,
Jay, who is co-owner of The Brood, which if you're not familiar, it's a Chicago-based horror-themed coffee shop. Macchiato. And he'll make you all the weird shit that, like, you know, one pump, no sugar, vanilla, two pump, caramel, full sugar, half pump, latte, oat milk mixed with hard grinds from Nova Scotia.
Extra hot.
Extra, extra hot, no ice, half of an ice cube. To go, please.
Oh my God.
No, I wanted that actually in a venti.
I don't trust anybody who gets
backpack
a sugar-free flavoring in their coffee. Just fucking go for it.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, I can't say anything because I drink Coke Zero. So, yeah. But I feel that's why I feel when I drink coffee, I'm like, it's a treat. I got to treat myself. If I'm getting a fucking latte, who cares about the fucking sugar at this point?
Right.
Let's just take the journey together.
I'm there for it.
But I can't drink really strong stuff because I get scared. Like when Steph makes, I can't drink Steph's coffee because like every time I drink even like a little shot of it, I have panic attacks.
Yeah.
So
it's not a good time.
People always say that Starbucks is so strong, but I don't think it is. They're like,
you seem fine with it.
I think it's because most people are used to like Dunkin' Donuts, watered down sugar. It's basically just sugar water.
Yeah.
It's like sugar. It's like
brown sugar
milk.
Water.
Yeah. That I think like anything that actually tastes like coffee, people are like, that's too strong.
Any real like coffee places that make like real deal espresso.
Real deal.
Jesse can't drink it because he's like, oh my God, panic attack, poop, poop.
Because no, it's not even poop. I don't got to poop. I want to die. It's like existentialism comes into the forefront of my mind and I hate it.
That's such a sad state.
That's why to me, like any like coffee shop is really like a horror themed coffee shop because they're showing they're going to make you have a panic attack and they're going to want to make you die.
It doesn't make me feel that way.
It doesn't make a lot of people feel that way, but for me, it really does. I don't know how people drink energy drinks. I can't do it.
That,
man.
I don't know.
Too anxious. Like my baseline's too anxious, I think.
I just don't like the flavor of them anyway.
That's the thing. Terrible. I love the taste of coffee beans, dude. So good.
Get a decaf.
Smell them roasted in the morning. First thing, wake up. You put the brown juice in your cups.
What was the theme song for Maxwell House?
That was it.
That's Folgers. It's Folgers in your cup.
Maxwell has come to our home. The sheets are brown, so you know you're not alone. We spilled coffee on you while you were sleeping.
Do you remember how like lame those fucking commercials were? Okay, I'm saying lame, but at the same time, they're such a part of my childhood that like I look upon them fondly. Like the Folgers one where like the dad's like getting out of bed. Oh, I smell coffee brewing in my kitchen. And he goes down the kitchen. He's like, son, you're home from the war.
Yeah, and he's like, we won, Dad. We killed every single one of those fuckers. And he's like, Dad, your breath fucking stinks like cheese. Did you brush it? And he's like, no, because I got to drink my coffee first. It's fucking nasty. I gotta kill all this bacteria with hot boiling brown water first.
Oh my God.
Dad, you stink like hell. You smell like mom's muff because you're probably eating her pussy and then you went to bed afterwards. Fucking sicko.
Old PJ.
Yeah, you gotta use some floss on that jump. Get a little pubation out of there.
So, so we're stopping in Chicago. Yeah. Where you going?
Stop in Chicago. Visit the Brood. I want to.
And DJ Intel.
DJ Intel, my boy. Miss that sweet boy. Break a Back Records. I want to check that out, which is next door. I think it's like a collectibles place as well. I can only go and buy the pictures on their Instagram, but it looks like a pretty cool place. And then we're going to swing to Madison, Wisconsin. Spend the night. Drive to South Dakota and spend the night somewhere in South Dakota. And then the next day, drive to Wyoming.
Yeah.
And we're going to spend 7 days there. And then we'll, for 7 days, we'll spend 3 days getting back and stopping various places. Badlands National Park, Devil's Tower, pay that a visit.
Mm-hmm.
Probably go see those rock presidents, their faces.
Yeah, we'll just like drive by.
I want to see them rock presidents, rock lords. Best Transformer ever made,
oh
son.
Oh, my God. I hope we see a lot of like cool roadside attractions that we can stop at.
I hope we get put in a situation where my son Nandor has to defend his father's life against a grizzly.
No.
And he dies in the process, and then he's a hero. He's like a local hero.
So you hope our dog dies.
But he kills a grizzly in the process.
He's never going to kill a grizzly.
He kills a grizzly, but he's mortally wounded. And when he's laying there bleeding out, I say, don't worry. The papers are going to write about you, son. And then they do. He's a local legend. And then when you go into the entrance of the park, it's like a gold statue in Andor.
Oh, and then we come home dogless.
If that's the price I have to pay for fame, oh, I'll sacrifice my dog to the thirsty blood gods of social media to become an influencer.
I mean, I think the cats would be happy.
I can influence everyone. What are we drinking right now, Stephanie?
Oh, we're drinking, let's see. Where's the hell that is the name?
Where the hell is
the
hell?
You know, this artwork looks like pickles. It doesn't look like it's supposed to be a lime.
It looks like a pickle amoebas.
Picking it. Pickle alien. Communication is the key. Lime pie. India Pale Ale with key lime, vanilla, marshmallow, and lactose. This is from Tired Hands. We talk about them all the time. They make the best milkshake IPAs.
This one, in my opinion, it's decent. It's too forward on the lime.
Same.
You need to put more marshmallow in that shit, man. Make that shit like frothy as fuck. You know, when I hit my lip, I feel like I have dessert. Drinking dessert.
The warmer it gets, the more bitter lime tastes like. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite of theirs, for sure.
It's very, what do they call that? Rindy.
No, pithy.
Zesty. Like the zest from the
it's
lime.
Pithy. Pithy, that's the bitter part.
Umami, what they say.
Not umami.
It's like a heavy umami. Like,
it's sour.
It's umami forward, is what Steph is trying to say.
I just like saying pithy.
Pith.
Pith.
Get I gotta
pith.
Take a big old pith.
Because when I say pith, I sound like I have a lisp. Like,
shut
somebody
up.
I know.
So fuck off. I don't have it anymore. I worked really strong to not have it anymore.
I still see a glimmer of it.
Yeah, and it gets you wet. When you see that little tongue going flip.
It's your tongue.
Flipping out. It looks like an alligator in a death roll trying to roll out of my mouth. And it gets you horny, babe.
I think it's interesting that they were able to train you out of it.
Yeah, they beat you, you know?
Yeah.
They like, what they do is they say you're never allowed again to have a Friday pizza night with your family and rent videos. And then you're like, real quick, you just learn to cut that devil's tongue out.
Is that what they call it? The devil's tongue?
That's what they used to say to me. They used to say, Satan's in your tongue. And he's having a good old time in there. And I'm like, well, leave him. You know, you ain't doing nothing wrong. Just making my tongue spit out sometimes with a lot of wetness.
And you're left-handed. You are just destined to follow a certain path.
I'm fucking artistic. I'm an artist. That's why.
I was actually saying that you were following a path of evil.
This doing the podcast is not
evil.
Something.
Like the fruits of the devil.
It's not something I choose to do. I have to do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm an artist.
Oh.
I have to express myself.
It's a calling.
If you will. Yeah. I got to take a sip here. Carry the conversation.
Have a sip. So I hope that we meet a Squatch.
Ooh.
I hope we don't meet a rattlesnake.
This is actually, that's a good point, Steph, because this is the first time I've been back to Yellowstone.
And by people.
Steph's never been to Yellowstone.
I've never.
I've been one time, and it was like a father and son trip. And I've talked about the story before on podcasts.
But
my dad and my brother, swear to God, they saw a Sasquatch when I was in the car with them, but I didn't see the Sasquatch because I was listening. I was flipping through the stations of satellite radio, and I missed it, and my brother in the back seat missed it. But they swear to God they saw a Sasquatch. My dad said it was bipedal.
It was fucking bipedal
was
and hairy.
Fucking bipedal, guy, is what he said. And so maybe this is my chance. Maybe that same Squatch is out there. And now he's like,
he's waiting for you to return.
He used to be a young man, but now he's old and he has a son that has kids.
I mean,
and he's trying to give his son advice on how to raise kids better than how he raised him in Squatchland.
That was a long time ago that you went. So
yeah, it was a long time ago. My dad was still smoking. And my dad was just still the nature boy he always was, where when you're in Yellowstone, sometimes
those bowls.
It'll take like 3 hours to get from one side of the park to the other. And my dad would be like, I got a piss, guy. So he would get out of the car and just open up the car door and stand right by the door. And me and my brothers would all be lined up pissing. I just remember seeing my dad's pale cock in the fucking oncoming traffic lights. And I'm like, my dad's got no, he just has no shame. Like, people are driving by seeing my dad's little, like, just white as a ghost, Michael Myers, you know, out there. What is the Sodom and Gomorrah guide, my Stephanie?
First up is Poison for the Fairies from 1986, followed by Swarm, the TV series from 2023. And then Smoking Causes Coughing from 2022. And finally,
coughing causes smoking.
Did I say it wrong?
No.
Oh.
And but finally, I feel like you thought you said it wrong, and then you at the end, even though you said it right.
I know.
But
like I something, said it the wrong. There was something, it was the ing threw me off.
Yeah, you know me.
And then finally, Sisu from 2022. Ended on a good note.
I wonder if it's Sisu. We're not saying it right, because every time we say Sisu, I think of Steve Zissou.
Me too.
And then it's Life Aquatic.
Where are our Finnish friends?
I wish we had Finnish friends.
We might.
I would be like, make me fermented fish cans.
Ew.
My friends, bring me all the fermented fish cans, if you would please. So, yeah, I watched, well, Steph watched some of it, Poison for the Fairies from 1986. I just wanted to mention it. It's a Mexican folklore, folktale movie, and it's...
Do you want to read the synopsis?
It feels like it's from the 70s, though. Even though it says 86, but I don't fucking believe it. It looks so 70s.
It looks so 70s.
Like the clothing and everything. But
maybe, it's like also the way the way the film looks.
You think it's because it was Mexican Americans love their ninos and their ninas?
Oh,
you think that's why?
I don't know why. Okay, so a 10-year-old girl convinces a lonely classmate that she is a witch, forcing the child to become her assistant. Though their games are initially rather naive, they gradually take a nasty and violent turn.
They eventually take a nasty shit for some reason. That's what we're going to say. But yeah, because that's kind of true. So the movie is kind of like, it gives me the feels of like a 70s Italian movie where like the movie's not that great, but like the cinematography is so good and the story's just weird enough to keep your interest. But it's one of those movies where like definitely not a lot happens, but it did have a really cool twist. Not really a twist, but like kind of like a surprise ending.
Was she really a witch?
No. So, anyway,
was she crazy?
No.
Okay.
So it's basically about this blonde girl who like her grandma always tells her what do they call it? Fairy tales and stuff like that. Yeah. And a lot of them like involve witches, and she always asks questions about the witches, and she thinks witches are cool. Basically wants to become a witch. The opening, shot of the movie is the best though.
The transition thing.
I made Steph just watch the beginning because it's a transition of this little girl, like freeze frame. And then it becomes her a little bit older as a witch. Her is a little bit older as a witch. And then her is like a full blown witch. And the fucking makeup is the best.
Yeah, she's
fucking
like an
hilarious.
Old hag.
Yeah. And she's going like, she's making like this weird little squint eyed face.
Throwing a hex on somebody.
So anyway, she's like in this like school, and this new girl gets transferred to the school. And this blonde girl who thinks she's a witch basically like makes this girl believe that she is a witch. And she puts a spell on this teacher, and the teacher ends up dying. But in reality, like, you hear like the adults talking, and the teacher just had a stroke, but she's like using it to make this girl think she's a witch. And then eventually towards the end, they decide that the witch girl is basically like plotting this girl along the whole movie. Like, if you don't do what I tell you, I'm going to put a curse on you. I'm going to kill your family. She makes her give the other girl her dog at one point. She's like, say,
oh, really?
Your dog's my dog now forever. And the little girl's like crying and like, no, I don't want to give you my dog. She's like, I'll kill your whole fucking family if you don't give me your dog.
Holy crap.
So ends up giving her the dog, and the like last half of the movie is basically them. She wants to make a poison. The witch wants to make a poison to poison the fairies,
right?
That come out at night, and they need to have all these ingredients like snakes, worms,
toads,
and they go and get all the ingredients, whatever. And they have to boil it, and they find this barn to boil it in, and they hide like this like tub on the second floor in hay, and they put all the ingredients in it, and they're cooking the stew or whatever.
Did they make a fire?
Well, nah, I don't know how they're doing
it. Like a huge fucking thing. It's like not little. Like,
yeah, I guess they made a fire. They don't really show them making a fire. They're on the second floor, whatever, making this like concoction. And this is after the witch has said, like, you're going to give me your dog. Tell me your dog's mine. The girl's all upset. So they're up there mixing it, and she's, and they bring the dog with them at night to this barn that they find to make it. And the dog's barking. So the blonde girl tells the brunette girl, go down and shut that dog up. They're going to find out we're here. And when she's down there, she's holding her dog and like crying because she doesn't want to give up her dog. And there's a candle. So the little girl lights the barn on fire to kill the witch girl.
Oh my God. Yeah. Does she fucking die?
She dies. Yeah.
Holy shit.
She locks her in the barn and you hear her. She's like, please save me, Frida. Please save me. And the girl's just out there like, yeah, burn, bitch, with like her dog. And you hear the little girl screaming inside. But it's like such an abrupt, weird ending to a movie where nothing really happens like that.
Holy crap.
But it was really cool. Like, I don't know. I didn't see that coming. So it kind of made up for a lot of the movie's misgivings.
Yeah.
But it's free on Shudder. It has a really awesome fucking cover, too. It's like the little girl's a witch, like going, ah. But there's a really cool scene at the end when the little girl goes down to the first floor to calm the dog down. She looks up and she imagines like a silhouette of the, because you could see the girl's, little girl's silhouette as she's mixing the cauldron. Yeah. And she has like this vision of like a witch, and it's a witch's silhouette, and it's going like, like mixing it and stuff like that. So that's why she burns her, because she's like, she really is a witch, and I'm never going to get rid of her if I don't kill her now.
So holy she shit. On fire. That's crazy.
Fucking delicious. I loved it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that it would end it that way.
Sometimes like Shudder's, well, not sometimes, but Shudder's been getting a lot of like weird stuff on there lately. I think like people bitched about Shudder because like they don't have enough weird shit. Yo, Shudder has tons of weird shit now. Like a lot of like the Severance stuff, like they get put, it gets put up there. Yeah, no, like voodoo is still like the cream, or is it voodoo? No, not voodoo. The fuck's the free streaming service?
Freevee.
We have it on our Freevee. No, it's not Freevee. It's on the app we have on our TV.
I don't know. Freevee is on Prime. That's their free thing. Mm. Like Tubi.
That's it. Thank you, Jesus Christ.
We were going to get there eventually.
I'm high out of my mind right now. And I just took like, we went to a barbecue, friend's barbecue, and I just smoked like one drag of a joint as I was leaving. And I'm fucking high out of my mind still from it. Thanks. And guess who gave it to me?
Same culprit.
A guy with a fucking big beard and his delicious girlfriend who makes all the deliciousness, Kelly. She handed it to me. It was their joint. And I was like, I'll just take a little one. And I just took a little one. And guess what? I'm fucking still high out of my mind hours later.
Okay, moral of the story. I can't leave you alone.
But they're like,
I can't leave you alone. You make bad choices.
They're like, what do they call those people in Britain? The gypsies. They're like gypsies. They come into your town, you know, they set up shop and they just start giving you stuff.
I don't
and
think you're allowed to say gypsies.
Well,
I think you're not allowed
in America.
To say
you can say gypsy.
I don't think so.
They come up to you and they give you stuff and you can't tell them no. Because it's like rude, and then they'll get their like gypsy gang after you and they'll kill you.
Yeah.
So I always have to take what they give me, which is usually delicious pastries
and
now.
I won't leave you alone anymore with them.
Kelly's just too nice too. Because Kelly's like,
poor choices.
She held the joint in my face. She's like, do you want some of this? And I was like, you're a bad woman. You're a bad woman. No, I shouldn't take this from you. You're bad. You're bad news. You're bad news. Like, she's like the cool kid. And I'm like, you know, no. But then I want to be cool. So I'm like, oh, I got to do it because Kelly's not going to think I'm cool no more. You're going to do this. I'm going to get really scared again. So check out Poison for Fairies.
I mean, as long as we don't have another tincture.
And if you're a fan of Steve Wilson, the guitarist, singer of Porcupine Tree, he did a song that I love, Harmony Korine. I love that fucking song.
Oh, yeah,
Steph hates that director though with a passion, but I love him.
Gummo.
It was a Trash Humpers.
Oh, and that garbage.
Trash Humpers, the best movie ever. People going around humping trash cans, and you think I'm making that up? No, that's the whole movie. It's people in masks going around to houses and humping trash cans for an hour and 30 minutes.
Did we ever finish it or did we just turn it off?
Oh, I finished it and did I watched you? It a second time because I was like, there has to be more to this onion that I didn't discover.
There's not.
All the layers are the same. Translucent and stinky. Translucent.
Oh, that's a good word.
All right. Next movie.
Next is a TV series, Swarm. Like I said, from 2023.
Not move. Next series.
It's a series.
Yeah.
It's on Prime. And the synopsis is a young woman's obsession with a pop star takes a dark turn.
So we watched it. We watched this like one weekend, one Sunday or something.
We like binged it. Yeah.
Because we're like, it was so weird. The first, so it's like, what is it? Six episodes it was? Seven episodes?
Something like that.
Six or seven.
I was gonna say like one of the co-creators is Donald Glover. Mm-hmm. And apparently he does some weird shit. Cause like,
apparently.
He did that show in Atlanta. Which I've never watched, but people say,
oh my God, people say Atlanta is the best shit ever.
Yeah, and they say it's so fucking weird.
I've been sleeping on this. I need to get on it. We need to get on it because so many people have told me that show is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And now that I know he's a, like, he does weird shit. Like, I didn't know Atlanta was supposed to be weird. People have just said to watch it, but they haven't really explained anything beyond that. And now that I know he's like into weird shit like this, I could see potential in this ball.
Yeah.
Like with not, well, I know Atlanta's already a hit, but I mean like with like horror stuff because like he gets it. But the, this, I think, like I said, it's like, it's either 6 or 7 episodes, whatever. The first 4 episodes are amazing and all fit the same tone. Then the second to the last episode is like a weird police procedural,
like a
interview.
It's like a docudrama.
Thing. And it's a whole episode of like this police officer trying to figure out these crimes. And then the last
putting
episode,
the pieces together of a serial killer.
And then the last episode jumps to like,
back to the character.
Right. And but in that weird interview thing, they kind of lead you to believe that like this crazy event happens at this end of the life. Remember, they talk about the concert at the end of that episode.
Oh, yeah.
And then the second before episode ends with the concert that you found out about at that. But basically, right. Swarm. Did you read the synopsis?
I did. Oh, it was just the one sentence.
So basically, it's just about like
it's supposed to be like
fun of Beyonce
and the Beehive. And the Beehive.
That sexy, funny honey coming down your face.
Yeah. And this girl who's in it, she's a really good actress. And
she's awesome.
She's in other things, so you would probably recognize
her. She's from that, I don't want to say Short Lived because I might still be going on, but that TV show with like the 42nd Street, The Deuce.
The Deuce, yeah. The Deuce. Which we really liked that, but we kind of fell off of it though.
Yeah, we liked the first season. It was like exploitation, funny enough, but I didn't enjoy it enough to like even care to watch the second season.
Yeah.
I liked it just enough to get through the first season, and I was like, eh. After that, you know,
yeah,
but it did have a lot of cool stuff in it, and I heard it fell off after that. Like,
I think they canceled it eventually, right?
I heard the second season is not really that great and stuff. But yeah, she's awesome in it. She carries the movie, and the first 4 episodes are as weird as they are because of the way she acts in it.
Yeah,
and just the way she portrays a sociopath is fucking awesome. And there's also like these layers of like her family dynamic that you're trying to figure out.
Right. And you kind of
put
the pieces together towards the end.
Because the killings are all up front. There's no mystery behind it. They're very random and absurd when she goes about killing people eventually. And it's like part of like the absurdism, but you're not really trying to figure out like anything like who's the killer. You're trying to figure out why is this chick like this? Like what happened to her? What is her family dynamic? And eventually they do give you little breadcrumbs of that throughout the show. And I feel like they did that really well.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Because the episodes weren't super long.
No. And it keeps you guessing. And then when you finally are putting the pieces together, you're like, oh shit. Well, now that makes sense. You know? And the killings kind of, I mean, when they happen, it's like, it's a little shocking, especially that first one. You're like, oh fuck.
But wasn't Billie Eilish in it too?
Billie Eilish. Is she in this?
Yeah. She's the, remember like she goes to like
that
cult.
I forgot all about that.
Is it Bonnaroo?
The weird women cult.
Yeah. That's a really cool fucking part of the movie.
It is.
And I'm going to say right now, Billie Eilish is fucking awesome in that role.
Cause
she's giving off like replicant vibes, like a motherfucker. I was like, yo, she could be doing stuff in the future in acting. I see it.
She's really good. And she looks so much older than she actually is. It's shocking.
Billie Eilish, because she has this like, I don't want to say weird, but she has like a very unique face.
Yeah.
Where she like looks old but young at the same time. And she's always kind of looked like that. But then when you see her like actually like in her costume, you know.
Right, when she's performing.
When she's performing, like it's different than when you see her like acting, you know. And she does have like a very kind of hoarse voice. So that does make like,
makes her seem older.
It's like a smoker's voice almost. It's like deeper.
I was going to say a Sybil Shepherd. Is that what I meant to say? No, not her.
Hi guys, I'm Sybil Shepherd.
That's not who I meant. I meant, forget.
I'm the bad guy.
The woman from, from Cereal Mom.
Oh, you mean the girl used to be attractive when she was in,
Remember she was in that movie where she wore like,
it's the girl that's attractive in They Live, but now when you look at her, she looks like an old witch.
Not fucking Foster, whatever her name is, Meg Foster.
Meg Foster.
Oh my God.
Foster's Australian phobia.
Kathleen Turner.
Yes. No.
That's who I'm thinking of.
That's actually spot on.
Yeah.
She has a very Kathleen Turner voice.
Yeah.
Man, I would have never thought about that. That is 100% true, Steph. Sometimes you step up to the plate without even trying.
I do.
And it's home. You Babe Ruth it. You don't even got to point to the fucking, you know, to the
outfield,
the bleachers. I was gonna say. You don't even got to point to the hot dog guy. He knows.
You know a lot about baseball.
He knows to Steph, point to the hot dog guy. He knows to put the hot dog in the mouth. You don't got to tell him. You fucking idiot. So what did you think of it?
I thought it was really...
Because I know, like, I felt like I was more into it than you were.
Well, it took... It was slow for me. The first episode, I was like... I was a little bit unsure of where it was going. But then once it started to kind of get kind of crazy, then I was on board. But then I fell off at the end. It was strange. It was it took a weird turn.
If they did that, like, weird docudrama, like, fake interview thing with the police procedural, if they did that for, like, maybe, like, 20 minutes, I would have been okay with it, but not an entire episode. And it also just felt, it was weird. So it worked in the fact that it was weird, but it messed with the tone of the show for me and the flow of the show. I was like, holy shit, I was so invested in this. And then you just killed my vibe with this fucking. And then the following last episode, I think the payoff's cool, but like the character motivations for like this character who you think you've got to know for like four episodes acted a certain way is acting totally different now. It's just like not. It doesn't seem accurate to that character. I mean, that's how I felt, at least. I was like, this person is a completely different person now.
Yeah. Well, I think what was interesting, which we talked about during the series as we were watching it, is that like all of the pieces that need to fall into place for her do all the time.
It's like she's like, it's like some outside force is just making everything fall into place like naturally for her.
Right.
She, like I said to Steph when we were watching, I was like, she's not even like a good killer or like smart killer.
No.
She's just getting by and not getting caught. And there's like, it's almost like, what do they call it? Like spiritual intervention, I don't know, I guess.
When you start watching the series, you're like, how is this person a functioning adult? Mm-hmm. How does she take care of herself? And then, so as the series goes on, you're just like, how is she living this life? How is she traveling around? How does she function?
Right.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, there is like a point, like I love the point when she becomes a stripper and
she meets all these great characters.
Those characters are all 10.
Also good, but also the funniest part, I mean, I definitely recommend watching it because it's really good up to a certain point.
I think it's worth a watch. I think you're just, I mean, unless you're like me, you might just be disappointed and let down by the ending, but I felt like the journey was awesome.
But the part where she does become a stripper and they're just like, why are you dancing to these fucking like sad songs? It's so good. It's so good.
Well, it's because there's all that artist that she's obsessed with this artist. And it's basically just her like being so obsessed with this artist, she'll do anything to meet this artist. And when she finally does meet the artist, it does not play out the way she wants it to at all. But she basically gets put into positions where like every move she makes is drawing her to this person. Like, oh, I bumped into this guy. Oh, he happens to be a promoter. Oh, I went to the promoting show. Oh, if somebody involved with that artist is here. And then it just all gets connected till the very end.
Yeah.
And like I said, the payoff of the last episode is cool. I like how it ends because it's like gives you like what happened in reality versus what happened in her mind.
Right,
and it's two completely different stories. So you're just like, which one is real?
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing that you like a lot of times during the show, like when things are happening, you're like, is this happening or is she imagining it's happening? I mean, most of it is happening.
Well, it's real. They even go as far with the Beyonce thing to where like they're doing the interview episode with the fake docudrama thing with the cops, like they're saying Beyonce and they're beeping it out. It's like so weird.
It is weird.
And there's this weird clip with Danny Glover like saying something about like Beyonce. Or he's like in a fake interview or something like that, TMZ or something.
There's also like there's this like statement that's like on before every episode that's like this is, you know, all these, like some of these events might be based on real things, basically. Right. So you're like left questioning, like, is any of this real?
It is the thing about being a celebrity, and not that I'm saying that the life of a celebrity is easy when you have all this, you know, never ending money at your disposal 24/7 and your lifestyle is very much like, you know, it's paid for itself a million times over. You don't ever have to worry about money, even if you stop making new stuff. But like Beyonce has managed to stay like relevant for so long.
Yeah.
She just has to have so much between her and Jay-Z. They must have so much fucking money.
Yeah.
But, it is an interesting thing to think like, my train of thought completely went off the rails and I forget where I was going with that.
Oh, it's cause you're high.
I know. I got high.
No, but okay. So anyway, what I was thinking is, they are like, they're so famous, right? They've been so famous for so long, but like their lives are so public,
right?
You know, and they do touch on that. That's
exactly what I was going to
say. Yeah. Like, you know, the whole thing with like Jay-Z cheating on her and all that stuff. Like,
that's exactly what I was going to say. Like people I never thought this was like an actual thing that happened with like, I know there's people that are obsessed with actors and stuff like that, but I didn't think there was like this level of people that were like this crazy right. into people. But then you do think about like, oh, like celebrities are like, you constantly hear about somebody sneaking into a celebrity's house just to like lay in their bed. Yeah. And I put myself in that position. If I came home and there was just a weirdo, like in my bed sheets going like, oh, Jesse, yeah. Oh, your bed sheets. Yeah, Jesse, yeah. Can I have your underwear, Jesse? Yeah. I don't know what would happen.
Yeah.
Like you hear about actors have to put like restraining orders against people right, all the like time.
Weird stalkers and stuff. Yeah.
I'm sorry. So what were you going to say? They might just say relevant public.
Oh no. No yeah, privacy. Just no. And every aspect of their life, like, and they do a lot of this in the show where there are people who are just tweeting about them constantly. Like every single, like there's these like groups of people, like all the fans yeah. who are just tweeting constantly about everything that's happening. And it's just like, these people are so involved in their personal this business. Movie, it's weird.
This movie is basically like Danny Glover saw Fred Durst direct a movie.
Donald Glover?
Danny Glover. He directed, he saw the guy who was involved with this, right?
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover was yeah. Oh, Danny Glover is from fucking whatchamacallit.
Jesus Christ. Getting too old for this shit.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. Childish Gambino.
Yeah, Childish Gambino. He saw Fred Durst direct The Fan.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, yo, this boy got something. I could do something with this and make it a little bit weirder with some black folk in it. And that's what he did. He just took the derp derpness out of The Fan.
She's got a little derp derpness going on, but not like not fan level.
Yeah, not fan level. No, Travolta went full retard for The fucking Fan. My God, boy howdy. And if you haven't seen The Fan, I would say it's an awesome companion piece to Swarm.
Is it though?
Yeah, because you watch this like before you're drunk and have some beers while you're drinking this, and by the end you'll have a buzz going, and then watch The Fan have another beer until you're wasted, and you'll fucking have so much fun. It's awful.
It is so terrible. His acting, oh God, it's so offensive.
But it's great. It's great. I love the first Fred Durst was like, yo, we're going to do it. We're going to do this. Oh, and John Travolta was like, you're so fucking cool because you do rap metal. I love rap metal. I just found out about it the other day. And meanwhile, no one listens to rap metal anymore, but people are swearing to God the new Limp Bizkit's like the best shit they ever heard. And I'm
is
like,
there new music?
I fucking hated Limp Bizkit when they came out fucking years ago with the hot dog flavored water. And then before that with like whatever counterfeit. I don't fucking need to hear more Limp Bizkit ever again. Terrible. Pass. I fucking pet, but I did listen to it.
Yeah.
I did listen to it like four times. I listened to it four times straight because I was like, I have to see if it's good. I have to make my, but it wasn't.
I only listened to the first album.
I'm really open minded with music. I'll always listen to it. And I'm always like, this is
a hard piss.
This is a big no. And fucking Wes Borland is such a fucking talented guitarist. And I'll never, I understand why he still does Limp Bizkit because he probably makes hand over fist cash.
Yeah.
And he probably still makes royalty money like a motherfucker. But Jesus Christ, dude, you could do better cool shit.
Well, he had that other band that he was. Well, he was the singer in the band.
Blacklight Burns.
Yeah.
Blacklight Burns had one really good like industrial-esque album. I think it wasn't their first album and it wasn't their last album. I think it was the album in between.
Remember you used to listen to it all
Cruel
the time.
Melody.
Yeah.
That album's good. But basically that's good because it was produced by all the, you know, people that were involved with making Trent Reznor good. Mm. So he had like a bunch of great like studio musicians like making that sound as good as it did.
Yeah.
But that album's good. Cruel Melody's a decent album. Recommend?
I do. I recommend
it. Yeah, I recommend it too. It was pretty sweet. Just falls off at the end.
Yep. Next is a French movie called Smoking Causes Coughing from 2022. Let's see. Synopsis.
It's a director that did Rubber, which is the movie about the tire.
Oh, did he do Rubber?
Yeah, and he did another movie me and Steph watched years ago called Deerskin, which is basically about this guy who buys this like $20,000 like deerskin jacket with like tassels, and he's obsessed with it, and it starts talking to him and making it do what he wants, and he starts trying to direct this movie, and he starts doing all this shady shit, and eventually starts killing people and stealing their clothes. It's fucking weird. It's absurd. But the director is like a madman, and that's basically his thing is just making absurd shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes the absurd stuff can be funny, but it's never like laugh out loud, like ha 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 ha. It's just like, oh, that was interesting. That's kind of clever and humorous, I guess. But you're never like belly busting, you know? Right.
You're never blown away by it.
Yeah. It's not like comedic. It's more preposterous.
Right.
I love that word.
Preposterous. A group of vigilantes called the Tobacco Force is falling apart. To rebuild team spirit, their leader suggests that they meet for a week-long retreat before returning to save the world.
And if you watch the trailer for this, we talked about it, like the trailer, how cool it was. it leads you to believe that it's basically like almost like a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers type weird movie.
Yeah, like a monster
maybe
movie.
Like Turbo Kid vibes.
Yeah, like rubber suit monsters. But
if I knew from the get that it was this director, I wouldn't have expected that even if the trailer told me that's what it was. Right. But I had no idea, I didn't even look into who the director was. So then we watched it and I was like, wow, this is just not. And then afterwards, when we were done watching, I looked it up and I was like, okay, now it makes sense. I wish I would have knew this going into it because I would have fucking readjusted my expectations. But there's a couple good scenes with them. Like, they're all different parts of cigarettes. So, like... menthol
and... Benzene and
arsenic.
The other? I can't think of the other.
They're all different ingredients of cigarettes, and they all combine...
But they're all in French.
They all combine to give people cancer. Yeah. And they, like, they're losing, like, their... they're breaking up as a team, basically. So, their rat boss sends them to an island to...
For a retreat.
Reconnect.
So
and so their powers are strong again because they have this upcoming battle with this like huge like evil
dude. Lizard guy who's gonna destroy Earth.
So they have to get their shit together. But so you're like, okay, cool. It's gonna weird shit's gonna happen. But then they basically get to this island and they're like drinking around the fire and it's like, let me tell you a story. Weirdest story I ever heard. And so you hear one story. Yes. And the other character's like, that was pretty weird. How about I tell you about this story? And then you watch that story and it's about a guy who got sucked into a fucking wood grinder and he didn't hurt him. And
he was still alive.
Still alive.
As he was getting sucked into it.
And basically he becomes a mouth in a bucket and he's still alive as a mouth in a bucket. And he's talking to his aunt and his aunt's going to take him to meet his mother. And then when she gets to the front doorstep and rings the bell so she can meet her mouth son, she spills the guts everywhere and all the blood and the meat. And then the dog comes over and eats the talking lips. And that's the end of that story. And then another story is like a fish in the water.
Well, that's the little girl tells that.
And the fish looks out of the water and sees a human being dumping like toxic chemicals in the lake.
And that's the end of that story.
And there's another story where they catch a barracuda in a river because they live in a river and they're cooking the fucking barracuda. And the barracuda's like, let me tell you the craziest story I ever saw. And then the fucking barracuda starts telling them a story, but it gets cut off because he overcooks the barracuda to a crisp.
Right.
This is what this fucking movie is.
Yep. Well, and then you forgot to mention that their chief is a rat puppet mm-hmm. who has green slime coming out of his mouth that all of the women want to fuck.
This is the best part of the movie, and I'm so sad they didn't double down on it.
Yeah.
Because he should have been in it front and center, but he's kind of like a Meet the Feebles puppet.
It is,
and
definitely.
Fucking like real women, and like every time you see him, he's like with another bitch that he's like fucking, and I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. I also love the fact that like you could see the puppets like little armature.
Oh my God,
and they weren't like, let's reshoot that. It's like, no, it's fine. Everybody knows the puppet. It's fine. Puppets have these things.
It is the worst looking puppet I've ever seen.
Because it's like its face is not symmetrical.
It's not.
It's like a big elongated dick.
And his ears aren't like symmetrical. He looks like has like felt.
Also, I got a question. Maybe it's just me. What? Doesn't the fact, not even the green slime in his mouth, but doesn't it make it even more disgusting that he's a rat that speaks French? Because something about that to me, when he's like, if it was like a New York rat, I would be like, it would be less offensive.
Because to
less
you, it
gross.
Makes sense because you're like dirty New York rat.
But like a French rat, I was like, this is fucking sick. This is perverted. This is making me feel so uncomfortable every time because he's like. He's like just slipping.
Oh,
but the first time I showed him stuff, I was dying laughing, and I was like, "What are you laughing at?" She's like, "All the green slime that's constantly just pouring out of his mouth for no reason."
It's so gross.
And then the movie basically ends with the rat's like, "Yeah, well, the date got sped up. He's going to destroy the Earth tonight, so you have to initiate Directive 1-5 on your droid." And it was going to send you to a different error so you could survive. So they set it to a different like error, and he starts loading the error. And meanwhile, it's like it shifts to the evil lizard guy in like his space hut, and he's about to destroy Earth. But then his wife calls and says dinner's ready. So then he goes down to eat dinner with his kid and his wife lizard people, and they're eating like galactic soup.
Yeah,
and it's like black, and they're eating it, and he's like, oh, it's very good. It's very good. And then he like dies because they poisoned him. And the mom and the wife high five.
The mom and the son high five.
And then the rat tries to tell them that like they don't have to switch it to another error.
Cancel the protocol.
Cancel the apocalypse.
Cancel the protocol.
I'm here to cancel the apocalypse.
They don't get the call because they're still sitting around smoking cigarettes waiting for their droid to load up.
And that's fucking legit the ending.
Yep.
And you're going to be like, what the fuck?
Don't waste your money.
Yeah, we rented it. It was like $6. So don't, I mean, I would say check it out if you like weird shit. And I would say definitely check it out for the rat guy. Because it's not like a terrible movie. It's just very, very, very strange. No, I thought the
stories were interesting. It just wasn't.
Don't pay for it.
It wasn't what I expected.
And I will say, I recommend Deerskin over this.
Oh, yeah. I think Deerskin was more enjoyable.
Deerskin was like more enjoyable, and it was just as weird, but it had at least semi-coherent story.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, what's the last one?
Baby girl. The last one. Oh, I wanted to say that on the, I guess, John Waters, it's called this movie, a superhero movie for idiots, one of the best films of the year.
I could see him loving this. Uh-huh. And listen, I would I ever say it's best film of the year? No. It's very like art housey also. So mileage may vary based on what you're looking for out of your movie at that time. If you go in with like an art house absurdist mindset and you're like ready to enjoy that kind of a movie, then watch it. If you're in the mood to watch something with high gore explosions and Nazi killing son of a bitches, then watch the movie we're about to talk about right now.
And that is Sisu. From 2022.
It's in theaters now, selected theaters only, small release, so you can rent it on Prime for $20, which I did, and I'm going to say right off the gate, it's a 10 out of 10. Do yourself a favor, rent this movie and watch it, and then listen to what we're going to say about it. I don't think this is a spoiler-ish movie. I don't think we could really spoil it for you, but we are going to go over all the kills, and you want to see those kills for the first time without us telling you about them, because they're fucking awesome,
you
bro.
No, I think you'd need to see this movie without us ruining it for you. Yeah. Watch it first.
Yeah, it's a
blast. Pause it, come back.
This is like, this is what movies are missing in today's, like in American movies now. It's just like, oh my God, we'll get into it. But I think like this is like the element that we don't see anymore in movies. Like movies have to be such sterilized adventure fun that you can't ever have just like fun in your, like if we made a movie like this, it would be serious. Yeah. In America, we couldn't have fun with it.
Right.
This movie's fucking fun.
It is. It's so over the top fucking fun.
Fun, yo.
When an ex-soldier who discovers gold in the Lapland wilderness tries to take the loot into the city, Nazi soldiers led by a brutal SS officer battle him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. And that boy, dirty boy, pale butt, and he got C-section scars all over his body, that boy.
So the movie starts off with a kind of an introduction to what the word means, and they talk about it also in the movie, but the word is, it's a Finnish word described as stoic determination, grit, bravery, resilience, and hardiness. Mm. And what they say in the movie is that there isn't like a translated, you can't translate this word, it's just like...
It's like John.
Yeah, well, I guess it's like John.
Someone needs to make a movie called John, and it's about like an indestructible like Dipadelph Kenzo that like can just shoot up all the heroin, eat like trash out of trash cans, have full blown AIDS and hepatitis, but he can never die. And it's just him on the SEPTA bus trying to sell cookies to people for $1.
That's that guy's on the L
to raise money.
At least he was on the L
back in the day. Yeah, now the L is a wasteland. I hear horror stories about the L now.
Oh man,
ain't no chairs on the L no more, just feces. You have to sit on piles of feces.
Last time I took the L, there were kids smoking on it, so yeah
it's out of control, bro.
It is.
These kids today, they got no respect
fucking don't
for
man
the, for the
for anything
for just the for laws life. For laws of the land, you know. And it's not even like actual laws, it's just like human decency laws where like you're not going to be an asshole and smoke a cigarette in front of another person, you know, that away from people.
It's like,
no, I'm going to smoke a cigarette in an enclosed space like it's 1945.
Yep. It's like the unwritten rules of civilization.
Exactly, Steph. That's exactly what I was getting at.
I know.
The unwritten rules. The unwritten book, but it's written in your mind.
Yeah, much like you just know that you're supposed to put your trash in a trash bag when you put it out for the sanitation workers
Philly
to take.
They don't know that in Philly. They walk outside, they dump their trash in the street, and like that's where a trash man pick it up off the street. No, it's got to go in a bag, bitch. Can you fucking get this through your head? Like, it's not a hard concept.
This is why we have a shortage of sanitation workers. They don't want to be doing this job.
This is why we have a shortage. So I've really done, first and foreskin most, I love the fucking music in this.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome. Anytime he's like the main character's present, the old dude, he's front and center. It's like they play like this druid groan.
Like throats. Is it like throat singing or something?
Yeah, it's definitely throat singing. And
singing.
And then when it's not him and it's the Nazis, it's like crusty Nazi rock. Just like distorted Trent Reznor guitars, crunching it up, bit crunched drums. Fucking good. Fucking good. But I do like the fact that this takes like, the idea is like a historical setting, the end of World War II. It's like pure ruination everywhere, dead soldiers hanging from poles. And it's also like the idea of like Europeans were also interested in like gold mining.
Right.
Which, like I said to Steph, like prospecting is like portrayed as such like an American pastime, but it's nice to see the Finnish family like getting their bodies dirty, like looking for gold.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, you don't see like prospectors are always like, I'm a redneck prospector. I come into California to find me's the gold. Ba-ding, yep. Ba-doom. I got my Trump flag and I got my truck nuts. So, you know, I'm looking for gold. Ba-ding, ba-doom. As Ben would know if he was here.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do give you a little historical background.
But real quick, where I was getting at with that is like the World War II setting is cool because like every time we have World War II movies, it's like in the height of the war, but this is at the end where right. like the Nazis are like kind of just burning everything, destroying everything, blowing up bridges.
A scorched earth.
Yeah, it's like their scorched earth tactic. Right. And yeah, they say that in the movie. But it's just, it is such a cool, it's like a post-apocalyptic landscape, you know, without like the typical like military advancing and stuff like that.
It's not like the major battles that we all have seen. Yep.
And also like the gold is a cool, the gold comes into play with the main dude. He's like a gold miner because like it's cool motivation, not only for him. It's like you find out that this guy has basically separated himself from the war to look for gold in like the hills of it's like
this beautiful countryside. Isn't it so fucking magical?
The northernmost part of Finland, which is called like
Lapland.
Lapland, yeah. So he's up there looking for gold and he finally finds gold. We don't know how long he's been out there, but you get like little glimmers at like his backstory because he's covered in scars when he's like washing himself.
Wearing a dog tag
and he's wearing like a ring that he keeps fussing around with. He has a dog that's like by his side there.
It's just like him, his dog, and his horse.
But like it's cool because like even with the dog thing, like this movie doesn't follow a lot of stereotypes, like, but the movie uses stereotypes to like mess with your mind because in most movies you're like, the bad guys are going to kill the dog because that's what they do in every fucking movie. They kill the dog and they make you seem like the dog's going to get killed, but the dog always escapes. Right. It's fucking amazing because they do it like six times. You're like, they're going to kill the dog this time. And nope, the dog escapes. The dog escapes. But the dog's basically just as immortal as the main guy is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, do you want to like go through the story a little bit here?
A little bit. I mean,
So basically this, you're introduced to this character who's left the war behind. You don't know his backstory. He's, you know, panning for gold and he finds like a gold vein. That's what they call them, right? Like in the main vein. In the ground. Yeah. So he's like fucking like, he's just like ecstatic. He's like sobbing. Because
like, once you like tap the main vein, it's like unlimited creme brulee.
Yeah. So he like digs up all this gold. He packs up all of his belongings, gets on his horse with his dogs, you know, following along. And he's going to head into town to like cash in the gold and get money.
Which, by the way, the lead doesn't say a word to almost like 45 minutes through the movie when he has like his first dialogue.
He doesn't say much even then.
Not at all. There's very minimal dialogue in this. It's all like mood based and like, it's like character driven, but without like any dialogue in it. It's like amazing. It's so well done. It's so hard to do that too and keep someone engaged.
All of the talking is really just the Nazis talking amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. So basically he's on the road and he's like going to head into town and he runs into some Nazis and you think this is where it's going to go bad, but it doesn't. Cause then he keeps going and he runs into, I guess the Nazis are fucking just killing everybody.
Yeah. Cause like the Nazis leave and they're like, nah, don't kill him. He's off to his own death anyway.
Yeah. And then this is when you see Mr. Badass. Cause he immediately is just like, shook, 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 shook.
When he gets confronted with the second group of Nazis. Okay. You get like knife through the head. And this all happens, and we'll go through the movie a little bit more, but this all happens within like 20 minutes. A knife through the head, exploding head from a gun, exploding horse from a fucking landmine, exploding body from the dude throwing a landmine, a dude getting his throat slit underwater so the dude can breathe through his mouth hole for the oxygen in his lungs, a dude lighting himself on fire for no fucking discernible reason other than to like escape dogs.
Yeah.
A dude getting hanged, but not dying because he's got bullet holes on his body and he jabs a nail through the bullet hole to lift himself up. It just doesn't even make any sense.
Not much of this movie does.
But like oh my God, the special effects, the gore are fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
And even the CGI is good.
Yeah. And the tension is good, the way they build the tension. And it's broken up into chapters, which I think is fun.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a Tarantino movie in that sense, because I think that's something that he does too.
Very Inglorious Bastards, but it's Inglorious Bastards without the drug out dialogue.
Right.
It's just like, if you just It's mean potatoes, Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
No fucking extras, you know, no sides, no salad.
No Michael Fassbender.
No dessert. It's just you get a protein and you get starch. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's all you need.
Oh man. I don't know. How much do you want to get in? You don't want to talk about the ending. I don't want to ruin it for anybody.
No, we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
Talk about whatever you want. That's what we're here for.
Oh man.
Well, if you're like a war history buff, you'll probably just get annoyed by things. Like you're constantly be raging about shit. Like
Jesse was like, that's not a fucking World War II tank riding in.
It's not. It was like built for Desert Storm.
No, it was from 1948. it says in the trivia.
You said that, but I was like, I don't believe that for one second.
It's a Russian tank. It's not even German.
No,
it's not German.
I don't believe it for a second. As I said 2 seconds earlier, but I do feel like the Finns do everything right. Like they took death metal. They made Finnish death metal with it.
Yeah.
Amorphis. Fucking one of the best. Early Amorphis was the shit. Then they took Rambo and they made Finnish Rambo, which is basically this movie. This is like Wolverine, Thor, Finnish, Nick Fury. If you combine all those things, that's what this guy is. You can't kill him. He has super healing abilities. He's like an old Thor in the looks department, and he's got the gun know-how of Nick Fury.
It was Nick Fury.
He was Samuel L. Jackson's character in the movies, but he was more badass before Samuel L. Jackson ruined that character from the MCU, which is toxic to all Marvel comics in general. They don't ever do the character.
I thought that's
justice.
Who you were talking about. I was like, I don't know. I don't see the resemblance. Yeah.
But this, to me, what I kept thinking when we're watching this movie is, this is what Violent Night should have been.
Yeah.
Like, Nazis trying to take away the American Christmas spirit and just massive gore and body count. This is the element that fucking Violent Night was missing. It should have been way more gore.
They only really hit the gore mark with that, with our favorite kill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At the very end.
Yep. With Zoms.
But also, if you're a fan of Rare Exports, and I didn't know this going into it. I didn't know until after the movie, because me and Steph were done, and I was like, I'm going to look on IMDb just see if there's any fun shit. It's a director of Rare Exports,
which we love
on this podcast, at least Steph and I. Fucking great, like, Christmas movie. We try to watch it every year. And it's funny because we were watching this and I didn't realize it at the time, but the main dude who plays the old indestructible immortal guy is the dad in Rare Exports. Yeah. And his son he's a very, I don't want to say he's peculiar looking, but like he's a very peculiar look about him.
Yeah.
And like, so he's in like an adult now in this movie.
He's in this movie. Yeah, yeah.
And I kept looking at him and stuff. I was like, I even said this stuff at one point, like, is that guy Native American? Like, what is he? Like, what is his fucking ethnicity? And she's like, yeah, I don't know. Cause he doesn't look like a Nazi and he doesn't look like Finnish to me. Like,
no one,
like
the thing about this movie is what, and I said, watch it, I'm like, no one looks German. So not that I could say like what, but like you're looking at the Nazis, you're like, that one guy could maybe be German. Yeah. Nobody else looks German.
Yeah. So yeah, and then at the end I was like, oh shit, that's the kid from Rare Exports all grown up.
It's crazy.
You're really fucking cool.
It's so crazy.
But like, I guess the director's sister, the main actor in this is his brother-in-law, because his sister, the director's sister, is married to the main actor in this. So it's his brother-in-law, the main actor.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool too. He uses him in all his movies as well.
Yeah.
And I fucking love, like, he did a movie, and I said to Steph, like, in between Rare Exports and this, he did a movie with the kid again
called
Big Game with fucking Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, we haven't seen it,
and it got terrible reviews, but like it looks like it has that like maybe it'll be fun element to it. So I definitely want to check it out, because I completely forgot it existed. I remember when they played we were going to see another movie, I don't remember what it was, but we were with Melissa and everything like that, and we saw the trailer start, and I was like, that's the kid from fucking Rare Exports.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, he directed a movie with Samuel L. Jackson. When the fuck, how did this happen?
Right.
How did this all, like, what was the chain of events that led that
Samuel,
to happen?
Okay, I would like to imagine that Samuel L. Jackson reached out to him and was like, I fucking love Rare Exports. Put me in your next movie.
I mean, that'd be fucking dope. Right? That'd be so cool, man. Right? I would love to think he would do that. I would love that. Wait, so much.
I want to get back into this like plot a little bit, because like the most important thing is like, so you know this guy has a history as a soldier, but you don't know what.
He's got a history of violence, yeah.
So when
he has sex on the stairs with his wife.
When his horse gets blown up,
That scene is fucking unbelievable.
That scene's insane.
Because you're not expecting it.
No.
And then also, you don't even know there's a landmine there until that happens. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And that horse just straight explodes. Oh, don't let me forget to talk about the ending, by the way, with the fucking airplane.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, the horse fucking explodes. And he gets thrown off. And in the process of that happening, he loses his dog tag, right? So they later on, like, he gets away because he constantly gets away. And they find his dog tag. And so, like, the leader of the Nazis calls his, like, higher up, whatever. Mm-hmm. And is like, who is this dude? And he's like, fucking get out of there. Get the shit out of there.
He's killed like armies of Russian soldiers. They call him the immortal.
So basically he lost his entire family, which is why he keeps fussing with his wedding ring to the Russians. And then the Finnish, he was like a madman, and the Finnish were like, we can't control you.
He was a dog.
Go do your thing.
He was a dog of war.
And he just killed hundreds of fucking Russians, and they gave him a nickname, the immortal. So that's the fucking story.
That's pretty cool. That's a cool. You know what I love about this? Simple story, simple motivations, but it fucking works for this, man.
Right.
They don't over-explain shit. It's just like, let's keep the story moving and let's fucking just put all this like awesome. The action in this is awesome.
Yeah. Well, like you keep mentioning motivations, right? So we know his motivation is like he's trying to get gold to like move to have like a life, right? Yeah. To move on. Well, the Nazis want the gold in the end because they're fucked. They know they're losing the war. That's what the main guy said. Like, we're fucking losing. Let's take this gold and start like a new life. Right. So that's their motivation too.
And that's again why I think it's a cool setting to do a movie at this time period during the war, because it's like what like you hear like I mean I've like there's so many cool stories of like the FBI and the CIA like trying to track down like these Nazis. That's like one of the main reasons I believe the CIA was even created to begin with, was to track down Nazis after fucking World War II.
Yeah.
And there's crazy stories with a lot of them, like how they went into hiding and they became
in fucking South America.
So many of them went right? to South America, yeah. And they became doctors and they lived like for 40 more fucking years.
I know. Like, it's so nuts.
And a lot of these people, like the one dude that I watched this interesting YouTube video on, I can't remember his name right now, but he was one of the most infamous like people in Auschwitz for doing like experiments on like kids. And he went and lived in South America and had another wife and kids while he was in South America and lived for 40 more years. And they never found him, but they think they found where he was buried at under his like new alias.
So crazy.
He did all that crazy shit, married someone, obviously never told them, had kids. Kids had no fucking idea. Right. Imagine finding out that was your dad
was
a
fucking infamous Nazi.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I think that is a cool little element of like, I always wonder, like there could be so many other cool stories told, whether it's fiction or nonfiction in this like setting.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it in that regard.
So, I mean, do you want to get to the ending? I guess it was like, so basically there, he keeps fighting these Nazis.
They keep trying to kill. Well, it's funny because these Nazis keep coming after him. Cause they want his gold. He keeps basically evading getting killed in like these awesome scenarios that are just like stacked like so well that there's never ever like a breathing moment. It's like this happens and now he's alive, and then this happens, he's still alive. This happens, he's still alive. But eventually the Nazis catch up with him, get his gold, and they hang him, and they think he's fucking dead. But you already found out earlier this man can't be killed from lack of oxygen.
He's fucking Aquaman.
He was basically like in the river like Jason Momoa for like 6 years just sucking oxygen out of dead soldiers' lungs. And he lives or whatever, but he lives because a fucking plane flies too low and lands at the gas station to get gas because they're in this like ruined gas station. And these two Nazis get out and they kind of hit the pole he's on when they're coming down, and it falls and he gets dislodged, and he ends up killing these two Nazis and taking the plane.
Right.
And he takes the plane and like basically crash lands it in front of where the Nazis are coming. And they're
down
like,
the road. Yeah.
And the one guy's like, the pilot was choked to death in this. And this is the rope I hung the immortal guy on. Yeah. And he's like, no, it's not. And he's like, trust me, I remember the rope. So they're like shit scared at this point. Right. Then there's a little
shit scared Janet.
There's a cool involvement with like the women that they're
because they have, these Nazis have a truck full of women that they're basically raping.
Yeah. And he basically rescues these ladies, and they get all the revenge and fucking start mowing down Nazis with guns. But then it ends in like the fucking most amazing way. Like, this is where this director just understands like pacing and story beats. And that's why I compare it to Rambo and stuff, because it's just like, it does such a fucking great job of this. But the movie does a great job of like amping things up. And the ending ends with like, he ends up.
Well, the Nazis have arranged that they're going to get this gold, and they're going to have an airplane ready, and they're going to escape.
Yeah.
So in the end, it's just the main Nazi, and he gets on the plane. The
main Nazi.
And the guy like shows up, and the plane takes off. He fucking uses like a hook. No, what is it? It's like a pickaxe.
Pickaxe or mining.
To hang on to the plane. That's the plane's flying.
He's like a fucking slasher. He's like a slasher villain, but he's the hero in this.
Yeah.
He's like Michael Myers, but he's the hero.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I have to think that the director was thinking that too. I want to do a reverse slasher movie where the fucking hero is the slasher. He's unkillable by the enemy. Because he's unkillable.
He is.
You see him repairing his wounds.
He's pulling bullets out of his body, pouring gasoline.
Lights himself on fire. Doesn't have any burn marks on his body. His hair's not even burned, even though
it's so greasy. That's why. The grease protected it.
But anyway, so ends up on this plane. He hooks onto the plane with his like pickaxe. Pickaxes his way through the plane as the plane's still flying and gets into like a showdown with the Nazi inside.
The Nazi kicks his ass.
Oh yeah. He basically beats him to death. But at the last second, the immortal guy ties him to like a bomb that's strapped to the inside compartment and fucking lowers and
opens up
the thing and lowers the, and releases the bomb rather. And the fucking Nazi just obviously explodes. It's awesome.
It's so great.
But then the pilot dies because he got shot.
Yeah.
And fucking the plane starts crashing, whatever. And I'm like, oh, he's gonna put on a parachute, but there's no parachutes on there. So he basically just ties himself to all these like loose ropes inside the plane. The plane nosedives going like 700 miles per hour into like mud.
Right.
And it
disintegrates.
It disintegrates. There's not even a plane. There's not even a wheel or a fragment of metal. Nothing. They didn't even do any. They're like, nope, there's nothing. It's just mud. And he crawls out of this mud. He's perfectly fine. I was like, and me and Steph were just like, this fucking movie is a 10.
Oh my God. This so fucking good.
Movie is a 10.
So good. Because every time you're like, no way he fucking survived that.
Yeah.
He does.
But you know he's gonna.
Yeah.
You know he's gonna. But you're just like, it's fucking amazing. The movie is, this movie was such a fucking saccharine treasure. And it was exactly what I needed after watching so much like crap. And I'm really getting tired of the fucking grief horror lately, where it's just like everything has to be so serious and every horror movie has to be about loss. Give me some fucking.
Give me a nice revenge
delicious
movie.
Yeah, dude. Revenge. Exactly.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. And I love war movies too. I love them.
Well, and I love any movie where fucking Nazis are getting blown to bits.
It's satisfying.
Right? It's really satisfying.
Yeah. We need to make a new movie. And it's just all Trump supporters and Republicans. They're all fucking getting killed. I watched a movie last night when I was trying to fall asleep, and it's called Trump vs. the Illuminati. And it's a CG movie that was released in 2020 and it's free on Prime. So I was like, what is this? And it's basically about a Chinese clone of Donald Trump that gets sent to Mars, and he lives on Mars for like 2,000 years because he's basically immortal, and civilization has evolved, and now aliens are present on Earth, and he's the only thing that can stand in their way, and this alien's talking to a statue of Anubis. It's so terrible. It's like loops of animation that they did, but they keep replaying the loop with like audio, and it's like audio dump. It's like just so much dialogue
over
these like CG loops of like the character talking, but it's not matched with the lips. It's fucking awful. And some dude's doing like a terrible Trump voice. I watched like half of it.
Oh my God.
And I couldn't get through it. But anyway, Sisu is a 10, and it's, you should rent it on fucking,
you should rent it.
Even if it's $20, you should rent it.
It's worth it.
I mean, it's in theaters now still. So I feel like for movies that I think are like, I heard a bunch of people say it's great. So it's almost a guarantee it's going to be at least like a fun movie. I'll do that. And so this was one of them, and I do not regret it at all.
Oh, nope.
Worth every dollar of that $20.
Yep.
So yeah, like I said, me and Steph will be going away. By the time you hear this, we will be away. After this, we will be releasing our episode on Suspiria. So that'll be coming at you soon. And we'll have a bite-sized Satan episode before or after that. Right now in our web store, we have the Cult of Kaiju t-shirt that's available, and we have a bite-sized Satan t-shirt that's available, which is the snake bite-sized because the snake bites.
Uh-huh.
Gotcha, Satan. That's available as well as our main logo, a poster. I'm going to put more stickers up there soon too. So we got a ton of merch to buy. So support us any way you can. That's one way to support us. Another way is on Patreon. Our Suspiria episode was a movie that was put in the Monster Head Lottery and picked from all the movie picks from that were Patreon members.
Yep.
And they are keeping the grease on these wheels to just keep on going deeper into the future. Life keeps on slipping. Oh, what was that song you pointed out to me that I was listening to, the Ghost song?
Oh, you were listening to a song and there was something that I was like, this is so fucking familiar. And it was Nights in White Satin by the Moody Blues.
My God. And I listened to that song like 10 times. And it's funny. I kept thinking the melodies were familiar in my mind, yeah. But like, and I've heard that song a million times, but for some reason, like the Moody Blues, like my parents didn't listen to them a lot. Right. So when I did hear that song, it was on the radio. So I wasn't connecting the pieces in my mind. And like, you heard 5 seconds of the song and you're like, is this a cover song? I was like, I don't know. It might be. So then,
I sang a line of it.
And then Steph sung the line of it. I was like, oh shit. I know that song you're talking about. And she's like, yeah, what is the song called? And I was like, Nights of White Satin or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah.
I was like, look it up. And you're like, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it's the Moody Blues. Goddamn. I'll play that for the outro so people can hear it. It's
so good.
It's Ghost. Like, they've been around for a long time. It's a kind of like the retro synthwave stuff. I think with this song, he's kind of like doing something different than the stuff he's done before. This song really, the production on it is awesome. It's a great cover song. I don't think he captures enough of the original track in it, but I think it's like just enough to make it for a catchy, like evil pop song.
Well, and I think for people,
dark wave,
I think a lot of people,
retro wave,
who don't know
vapor wave,
the original song,
retro
like,
wave,
maybe it's not as like meaningful. I don't know. I love love the original
song.
Song
is great. It's what I think that song is like. It's a song everybody has heard, whether you know it's Moody Blues or not,
right?
Because the second you hear it, you're like, oh god, it's been used in so many movies as well. It's like
it's such a good song.
I mean, except we're talking about that for a little bit, not to get us too sidetracked before I'll lead you out of here, but like we're talking about a lot of like 70s music. It's a feel and time of music that you don't hear much in music anymore, where it's like just, it's like absolute sadness.
It is a profound sadness.
And it was like, and that's when like, that was like considered pop music back then, you know, that was like mass produced for like a lot of people to consume, but they were still like intellectual enough to appreciate like, oh, it's not cool to feel sad. But I mean, like Steph even said, like, I really like a lot of sad songs, and that song, like, it just has that like just creepy sadness in it that like Blue Oyster Cult do really well.
Or I said
the Mamas and the Papas.
California Dream in that song too.
It is like one of the like, I mean, listen, a lot of people say that song played out, bro. But like it does have one of them. It's like one of the most maybe iconic songs ever written.
I think
like,
so.
You know, as far as like rock music goes, even though it's played out to hell, it's like even, what is that? The Alice song, Alice, go down and eat some cake.
Into that wormhole. Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah. That's another song. Yeah. Kind of
that's like more psychedelic, but
right.
But it has like there's something just sad and creepy.
What's that? Who sings White Room? In the White Room.
Oh, isn't it Eric Clapton?
Cream. Yeah, Cream.
That song too. It's very
awesome. Yeah.
I love that song too.
I'm not gonna do the whole thing, but you get it. It's fucking cool. Anyway, we will see you here back in the city. Actually, we won't see you in the city this end, because next up after the Suspiria and Bites I Sane, we'll be doing Cult to Kaiju. Maybe a longer gap between Sodom and Gomorrah and the next Sodom and Gomorrah, but we will be coming at you with that Cult to Kaiju. So if you've been waiting for that Cult to Kaiju, guess what? Little Steph gonna be watching some Kaiju movies. And if she tell me anything bad about them, and I'm gonna make you rate these movies
too.
But it'll be like on a scale of like one Mothra egg to five Mothra egg. Maybe we'll switch the rating based on what kaiju we talking about. But I do plan to get you educated on many of the kaiju. Whether this excites you or not does not interest me, but I will test you on this, and you will have to follow up on the next episode with a little quiz.
I'm gonna make a spreadsheet of all the monsters.
I'm dead serious about this. Gonna be doing quizzes. On the when we do the first Cult to Kaiju, everything in the first Cult to Kaiju, there will be a quiz on the following episode.
Okay.
And we'll see what you've learned and if you've retained any information. Because if there's one thing I know about Stephanie, she does not retain information longer than a month. So if she's able to do this, it will be a godsend. And it will make me feel closer to my wife, and I love you so much. And maybe one day, Steph will be like, Jesse, I bought myself a vinyl kaiju from Toho. And I'll be like, holy shit, let's go have sex right now. I'm so hard.
It might happen.
We will see you again on the Cities of Sin in Sodom and
Gomorrah.
Because of the end of civilization, the Clamp Cable Network now leaves the air. We hope you have enjoyed our programming. But more importantly, we hope you have enjoyed life.
city I'd always miss. These eyes of war. Yes, what the truth is, I can't see anymore. Cause I
I can't see anymore.